This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Julian Ng. We're living in very volatile times where investments can go up 10% one day and down 20% another, which is more than what some people could or should stomach. I love guaranteed investments is the title of the show today. And I'm joined by Lee Man Wai and Joyce Chua of Success Concepts. Now, let's start off with this idea of guaranteed investments. What are guaranteed investments?
Guaranteed investments are something that promises to either return the capital that you have had, or it could be guaranteed returns. It's something that's promised by the issuer or the institution.
Is this something that everyone should invest in?
Well, it depends on what sort of investor you are. Personally, I feel that there is a risk in going for so-called guaranteed investments. People like guaranteed investments because people don't like the unknown. The fear of the unknown. With guaranteed investments, you know what you're getting. You know at the end of the maturity period, you do get your capital back. Or it could be a fixed return. So you know that over a period of time, over 5 years, you've got 5% returns. So people like that. Is it the right thing for everyone? I think it very much depends on what the investor is looking for.
The funny thing is, when you don't want something that is unknown, then you know that's only so much that you'll be given back, because it is only in uncertainties that you see growth, that you see returns. However, that's just a psychological state of mind.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't realize that there is a cost to guaranteed investments. To be able to guarantee you a certain return, or to be able to even guarantee that you'll get your capital back, the institution or the issuer has to do something to ensure that they can fulfill that guarantee. So there is actually a cost to guaranteed investments, and it's something that not a lot of people realize. Guaranteed investments, as simple as it may seem, is actually not as simple as what it first appears.
So I guess that cost will manifest itself to lower returns over the very long term. I mean, you're talking about, let's say, if I think about the FD, which is sort of like a guaranteed investment, that's, you know, between 3 to 3.5% a year. Are those kind of returns enough? And should a person continue to focus on fixed deposit?
It's definitely not enough to plan for one's retirement. It's enough if you need the money in the next 2-3 years. But if it's more than that, then inflation creeps in and, you know, you're actually in a negative. In fact, FDs are not even investments, huh? They're just savings. So it's good. Guaranteed investments are good for something you need in the next, you know, for emergency, short term. Yeah. Other than that, it's really not enough. Those sort of returns.
Yeah, the headline inflation these days have shot up to 3%, and maybe it will go higher going forward. So, and it's not necessarily our personal inflation, because our personal inflation may run higher than 3%, which makes these guaranteed investment kind of lacking in terms of providing us long-term
returns. Lifestyle inflation about 8%.
That's right. I think lifestyle inflation is close to 8%, and I think a lot of people get lulled into a sense of false security when they think that inflation is only 2-3%. So if you put it into some investments, it could be a guaranteed investment that gives you more than 2-3%, you're okay. When in fact, that may actually not be the case.
As far as guaranteed investments are concerned, who are these suitable for? Who should invest in a guaranteed investment? Having said what we just said, that guaranteed investment is not for everybody, but who should invest in guaranteed investments?
I think there is a place for guaranteed investments. Like what Joyce said, if you are looking at short-term requirements, guaranteed investments are about the only thing that you can put your savings into. If you need something in the short term, guaranteed investments, at least if you put aside, say, 100,000, you know that at any time in the short term, 2 to 3 years, that if you need 100,000, you have it. So that's the place for guaranteed investments.
However, that's something that we're talking about, FDs and savings, you know, where the capital and perhaps some returns are guaranteed. But when it comes to the other types of investment, I mean, there are other investments which are guaranteed, right? So-called guaranteed, where, for example, you have a property and, you know, and rentals are guaranteed for the first 3 years at, I don't know, blah, 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 6% or whatever it is. You've got lots of that. You have insurance plans that guarantee you a return of your sum assured. You have perhaps some commodity, what do you call that?
You've got
some schemes,
where they guarantee you. Palm schemes.
yeah, some percentage of returns every year. Now, sometimes you think about this, or even you have unit trust funds in 2008 when there was a crisis where the capital is guaranteed. There's, returns are not guaranteed, but the capital is guaranteed. So a lot of investors like the word guarantee. So they think that that's safe. But essentially, after 3 years, you find that some of these guaranteed funds only return you like 0.5% in 3 years. That's worse than FD. Like Manwai said, the cost actually has been worked into it. Like rentals, I just spoke to someone and I said, you know, you're getting a guaranteed return from the developer, but actually it's been worked into. I said, is it more expensive than the, you know, normal properties they buy around the area? And she said, yes.
Yeah, I think some of those products that you mentioned, like fixed deposit bonds and certain types of insurance policies and so on, the fact that those are guaranteed is something that is simple to understand, but not property, right? Because property is something that whose prices are very volatile and whose rentals are not guaranteed because the tenant can leave tomorrow.
That's true, but a lot of people are being sold so-called guaranteed products. You know, the advertising
on guaranteed rentals.
The promotion is on guaranteed rentals. So guaranteed yields, guaranteed returns. And for a lot of people, that is attractive because they feel, oh, it's guaranteed. But the main thing that you have to look at is who is the institution providing the guarantee. Your guarantee is only as strong as the institution that provides a guarantee. What happens if that institution goes belly up?
We will look into more of the fallacies of guaranteed investments next. Today, we are talking about I Love Guaranteed Investments. That's the topic of our show today. And I'm joined by Lee Manwai and Joyce Chua of Success Concepts. You're listening to Ringgit & Sense, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Ringgit & Sense. And the topic today is I Love Guaranteed Investments. I have Lee Manwai and Joyce Chua of Success Concepts with me. Manwai, tell us, what are some of the fallacies of guaranteed investments?
Well, it's actually not so simple. When people hear that it's a guaranteed investment, you've got guaranteed returns, sometimes they just take it as face value. They don't look deeper. For example, I mentioned who is actually guaranteeing the asset. If the institution guaranteeing the asset is not that credible, if they go belly up, you could lose everything. And also sometimes there are certain clauses that allow the issuer to get out of the guaranteed investment that you may not be aware of. It may be in the small print. So it's important that you do more research, find out exactly what is guaranteed.
And in the event of any defaults, what is the recourse to the investor?
Well, that depends on who the institution is. For example, if you have invested in, say, FD, savings accounts and all that, some of these member institutions are covered by PIDM, and that guarantees per member institution, per investor, up to a limit of 250,000.
So that is that per Badanan Insurance Deposit Malaysia.
That's correct.
Which guarantees the fixed deposits of financial institutions.
Correct.
Up to a certain point, right?
Up to 250,000. But this does not apply to every single investment that you have. Some guaranteed investments are actually not covered by PIDM at all.
What I want to say is that guaranteed investments does not mean it's a good investment. Don't just fall in love with the word guarantee. Know that why it's been guaranteed. In a guaranteed investment, for example, an insurance plan, one of the most common mistakes is to look at values that's presented 20, 30 years later as being today's value. So it's guaranteed at a certain amount, but there is a reason why it's guaranteed, because they've also taken into account the cost of investing it.
It's not a like-for-like comparison, because you can't compare future values to current values and today's values.
That's right. So when you look at a guaranteed investment, not saving, look at IRR, internal rate of return. Get someone to calculate the IRR for you, because that takes into account time value of money rather than a holding period return. So that's important, because we've forgotten about time value of money.
Sometimes you get thrown seemingly very attractive return figures. But as Joyce said, if you work out the IRR,
usually so it's just slightly better than FDs.
Yeah.
And that was Lee Manwai and Joyce Chua of Success Concepts discussing the deceptively promising idea of guaranteed investments. And joining me in the studio now is regular PJ girl, but with a lot of potential, Lee Chui Lin, to talk about personal finance news.
Hello, Julian Ng. Thank you for that.
Good morning.
We're starting things off with something from Kini Biz. Malaysia will seek other measures of progress. The minister in the Prime Minister's department, Abdul Wahid Omar, said that although GDP was undeniably a useful yardstick to measure a country's wealth, Malaysia had long recognised that relying on GDP alone was not sufficient to reflect the development progress in the country.
He said that the GDP alone wasn't sufficient to capture the issue of inequality and also environmental concerns. And this was during the keynote address at the Beyond GDP Symposium, transitioning into sustainability. And he also raised the idea of the Malaysian Wellbeing Index. So I think that's something quite interesting to look forward to.
I love that. So many buzzwords. He also noted that that index was constructed using 14 components with 68 indicators, covering both economic and social perspectives, such as communications, culture, education, health, and so on.
We all know that all these social issues like health and the environment and so on, if you really want to focus on it, it's actually bad for business. So the GDP is something that measures the economic activity of a nation. And if you just solely rely on that, then you would actually ignore all these other things that are equally important to the nation as well. But they are very, very long term. And actually, that also brings us to the next news, which is that Janet Yellen, who's the newly appointed Federal Reserve Chairman, replacing Ben Bernanke, she replaces Ben Bernanke. And she said that she wants to add this word disadvantaged to the full employment definition.
So she has emphasized the central bank's full employment goal, stressing the need for progress on the broadest measures of joblessness, including the number of people out of work long term and those who can find only part-time positions.
Yeah, so recently they have abandoned their employment target of 6.5% and inflation figure of 2%, the inflation hurdle of 2%, as measures to guide them guide policy, basically. And I think this is quite a good thing that she's doing to think of other things apart from those things that she had mentioned. And this echoes the words of Wahid as well.
Yeah, during the ceremony after she took office, she said that the jobless rate represents millions of individuals who are eager to work, and that every position that's created lifts this burden for somebody who is better equipped to be a good parent to build a stronger community. Those are lovely words.
Indeed, they are. And also, it's interesting to note that Malaysia and the United States, they share the distinction of having the most unequal societies around in the world. If you exclude African countries, and Malaysia and the US are actually two of the most inequal society.
How are we defining inequality in this instance?
Through this measure called Gini coefficient. We shall not get into the detail of how that is calculated, because I don't know that either. But as far as the Gini coefficient is concerned, if you have a reading of above 40, and that means you are not an equal. Sorry, if you have a reading below 40, that means that you're not an equal society. So you have all these Scandinavian countries and other, Australia, they have very good readings.
You know, Scandinavia makes the rest of us look bad. It's really that simple.
They do.
And staying in the United States, apparently, if you had bought Apple stock instead of, say, the first iPod in 2001, you would be significantly wealthier today. I think most people would agree with that. But Paragon Real Estate Group took the scenario a step further, imagining your rate of return on an investment of $200,000 in 2012 that you decided to sell in 2014. They looked at the following investments. So gold, a bank CD, Apple stock, other stocks, or a Bay Area home.
You know, the problem with this kind of analysis is that it's very arbitrary when you choose your own starting and ending point. So if you take a January 2, 2012, which is the date that this report has chosen, then you would capture the returns of that period in time. But if you push it backwards, so back to 2008, where the global financial crisis happened, and then you would get a very very different figure. So it's not easy to rely on this kind of figure to make investing decision. It also presupposes that you're going to know the future. you know, Apple at one time was almost bankrupt. So if you had invested in Apple at a time, you would not have done very well. So the way to play a future that is unknown is what we have been saying on Ringgit and Cents all this while, is the fact that you have to diversify your portfolio of investments. Also, you have to invest into proxies for the global economy. And a good proxy would be to just invest in the world, you know, in a global ETF.
It's worth pointing out here that this is a real estate company, and that in the end, what they found was that a $1 million home in the Bay Area would have been the best investment, giving you 118% returns. So, you know, there is that as well. There is picking your starting and ending point, and there is, you know, announcing research that really seems like very good news for your company.
Didn't you receive some unsolicited spam about somebody asking you to invest in a unit trust that provided gazillion times returns?
I think you will find that it was not gazillion, it was 500%.
500% over the
Pay
last
attention.
Over the last X number of years.
Yeah,
okay,
so there you go.
There you go. That's a time selection bias.
And moving on, according to a study that was published in The Telegraph and other places, the best investment of the 20th century, red wine. They're comparing this to government bonds, fine art, and even stamps. And this is research by a team of academics from the University of Cambridge, HEC Paris, and Vanderbilt University from Nashville, Tennessee.
You see, red wine is something that when you invest in it and you don't make a lot of money out of it, you can drink it.
So exactly, and drown your sorrows away. It's yeah. actually foolproof.
But it also highlights the idea of how much money you have to gamble. Obviously, red wine investment is not for everyone, especially if you don't. If you're earning like 3,000 ringgit or 5,000 ringgit a month and you're setting aside 100 ringgit a month to invest, you have very little gambling money. And this contrasts to, you know, multi-millionaires or even billionaires. They can set aside 10, 20 million just investing in a casket of, I don't know, Rothschild or whatever you have it that comes out of the old world of wine, you know.
Yeah, and it doesn't make sense unless, you know, you're setting aside that 100 ringgit just to buy wine and drink it. But I think for the purposes of this study, it's rather different. And Elroy Dimson, who was a visiting professor at the Cambridge Judge Business School, also used the example of port, which underperformed fine red wine over the century, to caution that drinking fashions can change dramatically over time, which for those of us familiar with the works of, say, Dickens, you know, we assume that everybody back in the day was just drinking port. But he did also say that maybe whiskey, fine whiskey, may be the next thing to look out for.
Well, all this investment talk is bringing us to the, actually tying in very much to the tip of the day, which is invest in yourself, because we get too caught up about, you know, talking about the different kinds of asset classes, including earlier on, we were just talking about wines and gold and things like that and art. We spend too much time scouring for the latest property, the latest fund to invest in, and attending investment forums on Forex, MLMs, etc., till it becomes a second job. So we're always trying to get a quick fix to this idea of how do you accumulate wealth, but rarely do we invest in ourselves.
For instance, your career is a major investment that you may miss out on if you're too busy investing in your second job. There are things like specialization, learning, thinking, creativity that I suppose that can only really be built if you're focusing on what you're supposed to be doing or what you're, you know, purportedly getting paid to do.
And I think more importantly, wealth should be something that you build while at the same time getting fulfilled, building it. A lot of things actually go into that, including your reading, your networking, should I say, making friends with people.
Yes, let's soften that.
Yes.
Yes.
And there is that trade-off, you know, the more time you spend trying to make money, the less time you have for self-fulfillment, unless, you know, making money actually fulfills you. But a lot of people would say that, but they actually suffer for it in terms of poorer health, suffering bad relationships and so on. So that's the tip for today. Invest in yourself. And that's all we have for today. Hope you enjoyed the session. If you're join us again next week for a more interesting session. I'm Julian Ng with Lee Chui Lin, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.